Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I really appreciate your announcer voice when there's an air show involved.
Thank you. I do try.
I thought I was just going to get you up like 6 hours earlier than you would normally wake up to do this episode.
It was like an hour earlier. Hey, guys, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, gain access to all of our bonus content, including bonus episodes, weekly episode reviews, written pieces by me, all kinds of stuff. I do encourage you to check it out. The show remains ad-free because of it. We have a couple people to thank, Matthew.
You mean the best people in the world have finally decided to show up? All right.
Finally decided. First of all, Pat Stahl. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
And Elliot Rowe. I think it's Rowe. Elliot, thank you very much.
Elliot, you are a fantastic person.
Thank you guys very much for your support. Let's see. Also, I am participating in the Extra Life Gaming Charity Marathon. If you go to extra-life.org/team/The Simpsons Show. You can either donate or join the team. Anyone who donates $25 or more has a chance at guest starring an episode of their choice. Links in the show notes. On to this week's episode. It is Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming, episode 3F08, written by Spike Ferriston, directed by Dominic Pulcino. Apparently, Spike Ferriston got this credit mostly in name only because they had to rewrite, like, a large percentage of it, apparently.
Oh, that's sad.
I wouldn't feel too sad for him. He is also known for a show called Seinfeld.
Oh, okay. So, he probably did a Seinfeld plot and added a supervillain.
He probably did all right. See, so finished 49th in the ratings. Nielsen rating of 8.7 and 13% share of the audience. Okay.
That's gracious.
Fourth highest rated in Charlotte Fox that week, behind X-Files, Beverly Hills, 90210, and Melrose Place. That trilogy that's always just always going ahead.
It'll always be there until those shows die and The Simpsons keep going on.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was like, yeah, they finish ahead and then The Simpsons continues and they vanish. The chalkboard gag. Wedgies are unhealthy for children and other living things.
I just want to know what other living things were those, because that's kind of terrifying.
Dogs.
Can you give a wedgie to a dog? Most dogs don't like to wear clothing.
If dogs wearing pants, you can. Or underwear. That's right. Touche. Couch gag. Yeah. The Simpsons are a family of sea monkeys. Unsewn to the couch. It's made of clam shells, etc., etc. The TV is a treasure chest. It's not bad. Part. It's fine. Yeah. Episode guest stars, of course, Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob. And R. Lee Ermey as Colonel Leslie Happablap.
Good old Happablap.
Just saying that name makes me laugh. It's the stupidest name. The episode begins with the kids watching Krusty. He is doing his annual canned food, quote-unquote, drive, which all he does is put it into an obstacle course for Sideshow Melf to demonstrate as he slops his way through awful mess, including rancid...
Poor Sideshow Bob.
Rancid Bernays sauce.
Oh, that's the worst. That makes me throw up a little in my mouth every time I hear it.
At this point, we are jumping kind of back and forth between the family and Sideshow Bob. Homer asks the kids, whatever happened to Sideshow Bob? And they give him a little reminder.
Whatever happened to Sideshow Bob?
Don't you remember, Dad? He framed Krusty. He tried to kill Aunt Selma. He rigged an election. And he tried to murder me.
Oh, yeah. But what I'll mainly remember is the laughter.
You really should remember some more important things in that list, Homer. Just throwing it out there.
I like it as it gets more... Like, they've done this gag a couple of times where Homer's like, what? Who's Sideshow? Like, they've had to, like, hey, just to remind the audience. And Homer, it gets more ridiculous every time because Homer has to forget that someone tried to murder his son.
Well, Homer's not too attached to that son, so hey.
I guess sort of attached.
A little bit sometimes, depending on the episode.
But we get that reminder of what Bob did, what Bob has done. And then we cut to Bob in prison. He is building Westminster Abbey in a bottle, like you do in prison.
Well, you have a lot of time. I think they would get destroyed.
It's a very... I would think that anything very delicate would probably be a not... you should probably invest too much time in something that can easily be broken. Of course, it's a minimum security. It's a minimum security prison. It's all white collar guys, probably. While he's working on that, the rest of the prisoners are watching television. Bob is not a fan.
Oh, must you bray night and day at that infernal television?
Oh, look who's talking.
Yeah, Bob, you used to be on this show.
Don't remind me. My foolish capering destroyed more young minds than syphilis and pinball combined. Oh, how I loathe that box. That omnidirectional sludge pump.
I had to cut off there because...
You didn't include Rupert Murdoch?
It's not funny. I don't like... I don't want to give...
It's slightly funny.
I don't want to give him any time. He's a monster. Rupert Murdoch does make a guest appearance. He had to give special permission to The Simpsons for them to use his caricature, I guess. I don't care. Any attention shown on Rupert Murdoch is bad.
That's true. Fair enough.
They have to go to work detail. The prisoners do. And this time it is at the Springfield's Air Force Base. They have an Air Force Base there?
They have every type of military base in Springfield. Robbie, don't you know this? They have an Army Base. They have an Air Force Base. They have a Navy Base. Although in Simpson Tide, I'm not sure how far Homer has to travel for his Naval Reserve. I don't think we've seen any Marines, though. That's the one they're ignoring so far.
Okay, stay tuned this season. We'll get Simpsons see the Marines.
Although we'll talk about the Marines later in this episode.
We will?
We will.
Okay. All right.
Got a nice little rant about it.
Oh, I didn't know you had such strong feelings about one of the branches of our armed forces. They go to the Air Force Base. They are having an air show. And Bob, he hates TV. He also hates air shows.
Air show? Buzz-cut Alabamians spewing colored smoke from their whiz jets to the strains of Rock You Like a Hurricane? What kind of country fried rube is still impressed by that?
Rube!
Yeah!
I want to meet the first female stealth bomber pilot. During the Gulf War, she destroyed 70 mosques, and her name is Lisa, too.
I want to see some birds get sucked into the engines. Rare ones.
This year, I'm making earplugs out of biscuit dough. They're ready!
This episode is a very weird episode.
It is a very weird episode. They're really focusing on the humor rather than any coherent plot. I would just like to also point out that in the sounds the Simpsons make for the their excitement about the air show is the same one as Homer goes, the sound Homer makes in Pokemon for the prison rodeo.
Oh, yeah.
So that,
I don't know. This is really emphasizing, like, one, Bob's very snootiness. He doesn't like...
Oh, yeah, they're definitely going, like, rich person taste.
Yeah, he doesn't like air shows. They're, you know, all spectacle. You know, there's no depth there. And the family of... The Simpsons are very much the local... I don't know. The
local rubes?
Rubes, I guess you could say. But Lisa excited about moss destruction? That's a little... She doesn't seem like she'd be too thrilled about that, but we'll... I don't know. This episode is
I also was strange. A little weirded out by Lisa's happiness at the destruction of mosques.
Yeah.
That seems a little out of character for her.
It does a little bit. I don't like this episode is strange. It is it's a madcap zany cartoon. Like it's very cartoony. It's very much like it's closer to it's a Bob episode. A lot of Bob episodes do turn into kind of that Wile E. Coyote kind of, you know, Roadrunner kind of thing. But this one in particular, especially as we go on, it gets more and more ridiculous. Bob, this is the thing, Matt. This is a question I have about how this episode works. Because Bob has to go back. Did they go back to the Air Force Base without telling us? Is that what happens?
Does Bob go back to the
Air Force Base? Yeah, because they go to the Air Force Base. That clip I just played. And then they cut to him in bed trying to sleep.
I assume they go back like every day. It's like a prison work thing.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They rented the prisoners out for their usual 10 cents an hour.
5 cents an hour. Thank you very much.
Sorry, 5 cents an hour. 10 cents today was five back then.
Exactly. Okay. I was just a little confused because they just cut to him in bed trying to sleep with bemoaning the fact that Vanessa Redgrave is on television. And then there, he's suddenly back at the Air Force Base. The pacing of this episode is also weird. I think that is a testament to the fact that were extensive rewrites. Like, they had to fit all these weird things into a puzzle.
It's like, we have all these gags. How do we fit them together into a coherent plot?
So we're back at the Air Force Base the next day, ostensibly. And Bob is missing. Wiggum just tells Eddie and Lou, if anyone asks, he beat him to death.
Indeed.
But Bob is gone. You'd think he'd be a little tighter rein.
Well, they got the guy who kills people and eats their faces, and technically Sideshow Bob hasn't killed anyone. So, hey, you know, it's not as bad as it could have been.
I know, attempted murder.
Yes.
Yeah,
what kind of... did they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry? Ha.
At the same time, the Simpsons are visiting the base along with, I guess, all of Springfield. I guess it's we see various other people hanging around. They get a tour. We see the Harrier jet. We get Milhouse in the F-16.
Which he then launches himself out of.
Yeah, he hits the eject button. Not, you think they disable that if they're going to have people, kids, sit in that thing. But we also finally meet Colonel Happablap, played by Arlie Ermey. Arlie Ermey is famously, he played the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket. He famously was an actual drill sergeant, I believe. I think that's his story, and now he kind of spun out of that into more acting and had his own show on the History Channel.
He was the most drilliest drill sergeant ever.
I mean, he was effective in that role. That's true.
I mean, I feel like what everyone sees as a drill instructor
is him
in their minds is Arlie Ermey.
Yeah, even basically.
Like, drill instructors who are in the military now are more doing him than they are their actual, like, drill instructors from back in the day.
I mean, that's pretty safe. I mean, like, you don't know what you're supposed to, like, how to act. You just, like, hey, just act like that guy in that movie, even though,
yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily the best idea, but we meet Colonel Happablap, and Bob has a plan. We don't know what it is yet. He's skulking around the base. I'm not sure if he knows.
Do you think people would notice him in an orange jumpsuit, big feet, lots of hair?
Yeah, I don't know. They're busy. It's, you know, the air show's on today.
There's lots of cleaning to do.
Yeah, there is. But Bob sneaks into Colonel's bathroom, throws out his special towels, and then locks the door behind him. I just pulled this clip because I thought it was hilarious.
What in the world, according to Garp? Those are my dress towels. Who's in my private washroom? McGucket, let me in.
The door already is closed.
What? This is Colonel Leslie Happablap. If you don't open that door, I'll tear you up like a Kleenex at a snot party.
You say you're in the military?
Sweet Enola Gay, son. I'm going to come in there and corpse you up. Corpse you up and mail you to mama. Well, where'd he go? Got my knuckles all lined up for nothing. Sorry, ladies.
There are so many things about the interaction that just confuse me. One, at the end, he's just like, oh, he's gone. Oh, well, not, hey, where did that guy go? And there was something else. Oh, the world according to Garp.
Mm-hmm.
What is Garp?
You don't know that, Matt?
I have never heard of that now.
A book and a movie. World according to Garp.
Oh, okay.
John Irving, I believe, wrote it. I mean, Robin Williams. Okay. Robin Williams was the star in the movie, I believe. Yeah, Robin Williams was the main star. It's trying to summarize John Irving novels is sometimes difficult because they're. I like John Irving. I've read multiple John Irving novels. I like John Irving, but they're not necessarily easy to summarize very shortly. But I'd certainly recommend any John Irving novel. They're all good. But I'm a little surprised that Colonel Leslie Happablap. Maybe he saw the movie.
He probably just saw the movie,
He probably saw the movie. He doesn't seem like a guy who'd read John Irving. John Irving's a little touchy-feely for him, I think. But Bob got something from that meeting, I guess. We cut back to the family, and we get Grandpa's version of Air History.
Look at that hunk of junk.
Oh, you're ignorant.
That's the Wright brothers' plane. At Kitty Hawk in 1903, Charles Lindbergh flew it 15 miles on a thimble full of corn oil. Single-handedly won us the Civil War, it did.
So how do you know so much about American history?
I pieced it together mostly from sugar packets.
Mostly from sugar packets.
That's all you need.
I don't remember any history being on sugar packets.
I think I actually looked this up one time. I believe that there was some kind of sugar packet that used to have fun history facts on them. But according to Grandpa, either he got them wrong or they were wildly inaccurate.
Or maybe Grandpa just misremembers what he read.
Also a possibility, being Grandpa.
Being Grandpa. I do like his version of American history. There's some alternative history, like a alternate history novel waiting to be written, where the Wright brothers won Civil War on a thimbleful of corn oil.
That's all it needs. That's all you need to win a war.
There has to be like a air-powered Civil War novel written already, right?
I'm sure. I mean, that's historical reader like redone fiction. That I mean. I feel like the steampunk crowd would be all over that.
Yeah. We get Bob continuing his skulk, but we see his plan for the first time. And we see him impersonating Colonel Happablap.
Son, this is Colonel Happablap. That fool McGugget sprayed runway foam all over Chuck Yeager's Acura. Now get down there with the chamois triple time.
But Colonel, I'm under strict orders.
Wait, Enola Gay, son. Get moving or I'll tear you up like a Kleenex at a snot party.
Kelsey, Bob's reticence there to say just say those words is great. Kelsey Grammer does a fine job. I think they don't necessarily ask as much from him as they've done in the past. I feel like this episode, because it is much more cartoony, you know, it's more,
yeah,
it's he's more of a comedy act than he is like a serious threat.
That's true. This entire episode is basically Bob doing crazy things rather than things that would ever work.
Yeah. And we see the beginning of that by because this is ostensibly to get into this secure facility. We don't know what's necessarily in there until he walks out with what appears to be a nuclear bomb in a wheelbarrow, which I'm assuming that you're not supposed to transport atomic weapons in a wheelbarrow.
That would be accurate. In addition, unless that is old nuclear bombs were not that small. Newer ones could probably be worked down to that size, especially plutonium-based. But as far as I know, if he's got that retro 50s charm, that's probably uranium-based. It's possible it's plutonium-based, so it would probably, either way, be quite a bit larger than the bomb that Bob gets. If you ever see pictures of Fat Man and Little Boy, they were significantly larger than that, and they were just a few years prior to that particular generation that Bob says he got a handle on. So I don't think he'll be able to move it by himself. That'd be several tons.
I don't want anyone asking why Matt has all this knowledge about nuclear weapons.
Hey, I went to history class. Some of us didn't fall asleep in it.
I loved history class. History is one of my favorite subjects. Mm-hmm. One moment, Matt. I had a cat trying to knock a painting off the wall.
Oh, kitties.
Yeah. But as he's walking out he immediately knocks, he hits a divot in the concrete or something and kind of drops it. But that's also a myth, right? Bombs, the nuclear bombs don't.
Yes, nuclear bombs are extremely difficult to actually set off. The whole point of a nuclear bomb is that you have a fission core made of uranium, or these days mostly plutonium, and you put shape charges around it, and when you set those charges off, they all have to essentially force their pressure wave into the uranium to get it to for fission to start. So even if you pry up just a little corner of those shaped charge explosives, the bomb will not detonate in a nuclear way. You'll still get nuclear fallout over the place, but the explosion won't be as gigantic. So dropping a nuclear bomb, not actually going to hurt anything unless somehow the trigger gets hit as well. So yeah, that's not a big worry.
This is your weekly dose of science facts, Simpson science facts. But with that, we go to commercial. Move on to the second act.
And when we come back, we see the beginning of the air show. It starts out with a rip-roaringly exciting exploration of box kites.
Say, did somebody say Box kites?
No.
The common box kite was originally used as a means of drawing wet string.
Yep, that's exactly what box kites were always for. It's drying string.
The common box kite. It's good. Yeah. I like it.
Mm-hmm. We then proceed. Of course, the Simpson family is not too enthused by box kites. We go back and cut back to Bob, where he is. I believe what they're attempting to show is him splicing into the video line, which is not at all how that works. But past that,
it's really bad that you're like the worst person that could have watched this.
I know, it's like, come on, obviously Bob would need to cut the cable, put some compression ends on both sides, and then just use a coupler of some sort or a splitter. But no, he just clamps on with what appear to be jumper cables.
Well, that's how that works.
How video works, dang it.
That's how that works, right?
Anyway,
we need to repeat this just this one time. Simpsons would not lie to us.
That's true. They were not. That's exactly how video worked back in the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, we then move on to the Harrier Jets, where they play the Scorpions, and show them on Tyrannovision, because, you know, why move your head around like, what does Homer say? A goob?
I believe so.
Okay. When Tyrannovision shows him what is necessary. I would also like to point out that in Hap Happablap's speech, he says the pride of the United States Air Force, the Harrier jump jet. Harriers were never actually used by the U.S. Air Force. They were used by the Marines and the Royal Air Force in the U.K. So, once again,
the Simpsons would never lie to us.
But of course, we also get a scene of Maggie up on the Jumbotron. The Tyrannovision.
Same thing.
And they're interrupted by Bob, who has to essentially lay out his incredibly detailed plan to the people in order to receive the external gratification that he so desperately needs.
Hello, Springfield. Sorry to divert your attention from all the big noises and shiny things, but something's been troubling me lately. Television. Wouldn't our lives be so much richer if television were done away with?
What?
Surely he's not talking about VH1.
Why, we could revive the lost arts of conversation and scrimshaw. Thus, I submit to you, we abolish television permanently.
Go back to Massachusetts, Pinko!
Oh, and one more thing. I've stolen a nuclear weapon. If you do not rid this city of television within 2 hours, I will detonate it. Farewell.
By the way, I'm aware of the irony of appearing on TV in order to decry it, so don't bother pointing that out.
Yeah, I didn't get that last part when I first recorded it, so I had to go back and get it, because that's one of the best parts of his entire speech.
It's really good. And they do, his voice is pitched up for that.
It is. I went back and listened to that when I first downloaded this episode 20 years ago almost, and I was like, oh wow, they're not getting it. It is pitched up just a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little tinny, and you're like, oh, I don't think I noticed it until I knew, you know, mm-hmm. the reveal later on. But they do their due diligence. They do pitch up his voice a little bit.
So at this point, somebody is really on point and hits the air raid siren. Why they were just hanging out by the air raid siren, I couldn't tell you.
That guy's job. That's all he did.
Of course. That's true. It is the military. They've got one guy who just sits there asleep next to the air raid siren for days at a time, just waiting for the point that he has to push the button or crank the handle if it's an old school air raid siren. Of course, everyone is in a total panic at this point, running away. The Simpsons are basically just going, running as fast as they can. Marge is, of course, panicking, telling the kids not to panic. And I love Lisa's line that, oh, Mom, you're stepping on my shoes. And Marge says, we can always get more shoes. Go, go, go. Which I don't think that's what Lisa was getting at, but hey. Bart, of course, sees the guns and wants to be around. People start shooting because Bart has the survival instincts of, I don't know, something that really wants to die. One of those ants with the fungus in its brain.
I was gonna say a lemming, but actually lemmings aren't. That isn't true either. Lemmings.
That isn't true. Yeah.
And lemmings don't kill themselves.
Damn you, Walt Disney. Anyway, Lisa, of course, stays behind to try and rescue him, and Marge and Homer get cut off from Bart and Lisa, and we cut from them to the war room beneath the base, because every military base has a war room underneath it somewhere.
There's several references to Strangelove in this, and this is one.
Oh
of them.
Yeah. Nuclear bomb war room.
Fighting. There's no fighting in the war room, Matt.
That's right. No fighting in the war room. No sex in the champagne room. Don't get those confused.
That's an interesting matchup you proposed.
Well, you know, there's no something in a something room. Those are my two go-tos.
Okay, good.
Basically, they begin to start searching the base immediately. They have to search every square inch. Someone finds poor Grandpa stuck in a porta potty, which he, I guess, assumes is an elevator. And then he goes to the basement, which, if you've ever been in a porta potty, the basement of a porta potty is the most disgusting place on earth. Pretty sure several new diseases are discovered every day in a porta potty.
His line, this elevator only goes to the basement, and someone made an awful mess down there. Makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, which luckily Grandpa doesn't appear to have been covered in any of that, because that's disgusting.
Yeah, that's bad.
But after their search, essentially, we get to go back to the war room, and we learn the results of their search.
Bob is not here. We have searched every square inch of this base, and all we have found is porno!
Sorry, I just love his porno line.
And I do want it. One of our UK listeners did tweet at me about one of those magazines is much dirtier when used when UK slang is applied than American slang. I'm not sure if I should say it because I guess Granny Fanny is the name of the one.
Oh yes, that is much worse than in the UK.
That would be it's on The Simpsons. I mean, it's on the show, so I guess it's still applying to our PG rating, but. it is far dirtier in the UK than it is in the US.
Yeah. I'm sure there was nobody on The Simpsons who really cared about that. But,
no, they probably didn't even think about it.
No one ever thinks about UK slang because it's also weird. We then get to see the representatives of television who show up to argue on behalf of their medium. We get to see that Doctor Who shows up, one of the previous Doctor Whos. I believe that's the fourth or fifth Doctor?
Fourth probably? Doctor, I believe it's fourth the Scarf. I'm not the a huge one. Who fan, but yeah, I believe the Scarf is the fourth Doctor. Yeah.
We also get Steve Urkel. We get Krusty, who I guess is supposed to be famous outside of Springfield. Kent Brockman. Once again, I don't know why he's there. He's just a local newsman and Bumblebee man.
I think they have both national and local representatives.
Of course.
In Doctor Who, the actually international. I mean, I think that's true. I think he's arguably, especially now, more recognizable than Steve Urkel.
Definitely at this point. Given which doctor you're talking about, you'd have to put all, 12 or 13 of them up there now? that guy.
I think there's 13. I want to say 13. 13, yeah. I'm not positive.
Anyway, at this point, basically, Mayor Quimby is giving in to Bob's demands because, well, they have to save the town. I love Quimby's line, Springfield will not negotiate with terrorists. Is there a town nearby that will? But they do end up negotiating with Bob, essentially. Krusty pipes in with a great line that says, if we get rid of TV, I think the survivors would envy the dead. Because is a life without TV really worth it?
Yeah,
I think so as well. I mean, there's always books and the internet.
And, well, I mean, they didn't have the nice things we have today where television is not, you don't really need it to get. I mean, if you add programming from Netflix and stuff like that, if you count that as television, I'd get a little bit more defensive. But
that's true.
What is television? Is YouTube television? It's certainly the same.
They would probably call it video content.
I know, but it's the same type of programming that Bob is railing against. There's plenty of idiots on YouTube.
That's true. Well, he says no television, but what about movies? Is it all video content or is it just TV? Maybe Bob would see TV today and go, TV's a lot better now. Maybe we shouldn't eliminate it.
Yeah, I think he'd probably have a couple more caveats because, you know, television programming has gotten better. And there's, you know, a lot of auteurs are, you know, moving into making television shows instead of film.
To be fair, if I saw 90s television, I'd be like, you know what? We don't really need this anymore because it was the 90s.
What about The Simpsons?
Well, there was The Simpsons. There was also King of the Hill at this point.
Seinfeld was good.
Seinfeld. Yeah, that's true. Okay, there were a few good shows, mostly sitcoms. I think we're in the golden age, still in the golden age for dramatic television, but sitcoms were okay. Comedy lived on television, essentially. And we all know Bob is very particular about his comedy. At that point, they make the decision that, yes, TV is going to be shut down, despite Krusty's defenses, and we get a great goodbye message from Kent Brockman.
Whoa, ho, ho, let's not go nuts. Would it really be worth living in a world without television? I think the survivors would envy the dead.
Sorry, that was Krusty talking about life without television. This is Kent Brockman's sign-off.
And as my final newscast draws to a close, I'm reminded of a few of the events that brought me closer to you. The collapse of the Soviet Union, premium ice cream price wars, dogs that were mistakenly issued major credit cards, and others who weren't so lucky. And so, farewell. Don't forget to look for my new column in PC World Magazine.
It's very important because, even Kent Brockman at that point knew the internet was the future.
And
good old PC Magazine.
That mention of dogs being issued major credit cards. I'm curious if they were
back down the line.
Yeah, if they remembered that and wrote the episode with Laddie in it, or I don't know if they
that's the following season, so maybe it was like on their list of stuff to do.
Yeah, they were like, it was potential, and they're just like, throw it in as a gag.
But anyway, we also get a goodbye from Bumblebee Man, who says thank you for all the memories, and especially thank you to Goya, which I don't really think that's racist, but it's
not racist. I mean, an ethnic food would probably be sponsoring a Spanish-speaking television show. That makes
that's
perfect
true.
Sense.
I feel like
that's
the only one that
that's their
that
market.
Most people would have recognized in the 90s.
Yeah, it's not racist.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. All right. Bob is, of course, watching all of this and celebrating as TV slowly goes off the air. Bob wins, essentially. Lisa figures out where Bob is hiding because she's like, I figured it out. What makes your voice high? And Bart's response of tight binding underwear still makes me laugh.
Well, that
more than a little.
There was Marge was earlier worrying about the kids, and remember,
clean underwear.
And then Marge is like, at least they have clean underwear. And then we see jump cut to Bart's underwear just sitting on his bed. And he is
done.
He's
done.
He is an unfurnished basement, I believe, as he puts it.
But at that point, we go back to Bob, who is celebrating until the emergency broadcasting system pops in and we hear the newest evolution of television.
Hey, hey! Krusty the Clown is back on the air. 12 hours a day. The only game in town.
Krusty? But how?
Coming at you live from the Civil Defense Shack in the remote alkali flats of the Springfield Badlands. I'll be beaming out 11 watts of wackiness, hour after hour, of unscripted, unrehearsed comedy, featuring, Professor Gascan, and former President Ike Eisenhower. Let's get busy.
Yeah, that's...
That's exactly funny. How I remember Eisenhower talking.
Yep, not warning us about the military-industrial complex, but saying, let's get busy.
that's the Ike Eisenhower I know.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I just have to point out that the whole reason Krusty wants to do this is because his ratings will be sky high because everyone will have to watch him, which, one, he's on the emergency broadcasting system, so very few people will be able to watch him, and two, no one's going to buy advertising for the one television show. So, sorry, Krusty. At this point, though, Bob is basically frustrated and takes the easy way out, as Lisa says, and pushes the button.
And we get like a flash of light.
True.
And then it cuts to commercial, and then we come back and we get a very brief sequence that is a reference to, what is it? It's like a...
Oh, it was that PSA from the 80s or whatever.
Yeah, it was the Lyndon B. Johnson ad in the 64 presidential election, also Fail Safe, a film in 1964. So two 1964 nuclear threat things, you know, it's a very, you know, the threat of nuclear war was very much in the zeitgeist in that period. So
right. That
there's like cuts to different people in Springfield as the camera like zooms in on them. It's very dramatic. But then, and we see a mushroom cloud And then we realize the mushroom cloud is maybe like 2 inches tall.
Yeah.
And the bomb basically falls apart and is full of rats.
Well, that's what happens when a bomb sits unused for so long.
I guess so. The rats move in. Apparently it had an expiration date of 1959.
Well, that's what happens. Time makes fools of us all.
It certainly does. So Bob, upset that his plan again hasn't worked, which would have murdered everyone and himself. That's the other thing. Like, Bob doesn't seem like the type to kill himself with a plan.
Yeah, that seems to be like what he values more than anything is his own life. So why would he do that?
He's not. Yeah, it's not like he's like this is some desperate last stand. You know, this is just him getting wanting to get television. He's like more insane in this than he has been in the past. He decides he's going to get what's the word I'm looking for? Mm-hmm. Consolation prize by killing Bart. And Bart tries to stall him. Bob says, that won't work. And then Bart does stall him long enough for Lisa to communicate a message on the big, I don't know what you call those things, Matt. The big screen on the front of the blimp.
Message center is usually what's referred to as.
Okay. And it's, again, there's a lot of visual, especially in this third act, a lot of visual gags. And that one in particular is really funny because it's Lisa's like, help, please. And because seeing her rescue message used in the same, and she has like the little bomb symbol in there. Like it's really nice.
Emoji back before emoji were popular.
Exactly. So Bob escapes with Bart as the police and military surround the blimp. He cuts it open and it kind of explodes and goes everywhere and they lose him in the confusion. And then we get, first he tries the Harrier jet, which
thank God for the idiot proof Air Force.
He pushes the start button. It immediately goes straight. Harrier jets, don't they lift straight up? Isn't that the thing with Harrier jets?
Most of them.
They have vertical liftoff. They don't need to have a runway.
Generally, most Harriers are set up for a short takeoff and vertical landing, but they could also be completely VTOL.
Okay. But it doesn't. It runs into a ditch. And Bob, takes the Wright Brothers plane, because that's a good option. The Wright Brothers plane didn't even have an engine, did it?
I'm pretty sure it had an engine, yeah.
It was very
otherwise
simple.
It wouldn't be a plane, it'd be a glider.
Okay. I know they had gliders as well, right? They had developed some
absolutely.
Gliders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They've had gliders for a long time.
No, but the Wright Brothers in particular, I thought they had.
Oh, yes.
They had developed gliders as well. Lisa does recap what happened to the kids in the base.
Mom, I found Sideshow Bob's hideout and I got a secret message to the police that I had a blimp follow me and I was in an atomic blast, but I'm okay now.
Well, I wrecked the gate, but you don't hear me bragging.
So, Lisa's like childlike excitement for that. I really enjoy that. We get in a couple fighter jets trying to chase down the Wright Brothers plane. They move a little too fast for the Wright Brothers plane.
Just a little bit.
A little too fast.
Suggest we get out and walk.
So we get a very low speed chase with Bob and Bart in the Wright Brothers plane and everyone else walking behind it, idling in their vehicles. The Simpsons car at this point has all the tires flat because Homer backed up over the spike strip. We cut to Bart and Bob on the plane.
Ah, for the days when aviation was a gentleman's pursuit. Back before every Joe Sweatsock could wedge himself behind a lunch tray and jet off to Raleigh-Durham.
Are you getting lots of bugs in your mouth, too?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like they're not moving fast enough to get a lot of bugs in their feet.
Bugs in their feet?
Teeth, sorry.
Teeth. Feet and teeth are the same, Matt.
Yeah, totally. Same thing. You use your feet to chew up food.
We get the military. Everyone's chasing down Bob, and he's going, 10 miles an hour at most?
Maybe. Like they're walking beneath him and keeping up.
Oh, I guess that's true. So it'd be like 5. Bart kind of braces him. He's going to get caught. And then Bob turns even more crazy.
You can't escape, Bob. If the tennis rackets don't get you, the pool skimmers will.
Ooh, I never planned to escape. You see, this is a kamikaze mission. You and I are going to kill Krusty the Clown.
I pull that mainly because I liked the orchestration behind it.
The music is really good in this episode.
The plucking strings and stuff like that. It's really good. It's okay. There's a lot of this episode is just off the rails. We cut to Krusty. He's out still in the Springfield Badlands doing his show, and now he has a replacement for Itchy and Scratchy.
Kids, Itchy and Scratchy can't be here today, but instead, we've got the next best thing. It's the Stingy and Battery Show. They bite and light and bite and light and bite. Bye bye bye, yada yada. You know what I'm talking about.
that's him dropping the scorpion at the end. I do enjoy the Stingy and Battery Show. That seems like a duo that is not to miss. I mean, don't you remember that one time that Stingy and Battery
tried to sting Battery and then just got shocked for his efforts?
That was a good one.
Oh, Stingy, will you never learn?
Good. That was a good clip of that show.
If you say so, Robbie. If you say so.
So Bob swerves the airplane out of the way of the bull skimmers and into the desert. He's aiming the plane square at the little shack that Krusty is in. Krusty sees the plane coming at him and dives out the window, breaking the glass, and then waits for a while and smokes a cigarette. And then eventually,
what is the freaking hold up?
And then finally, Bob hits the shack with his plane. The plane bounces off because it is made out of wooden paper, and is going 5 miles an hour. The heaviest thing in that plane is Bob. Bob
by a long shot.
Yeah, and so it bounces off. They hit the ground, and Bob is apprehended. In a very non-climactic finale of this very low speed chase. It's a very strange thing because this episode is crazy because it first is structured around this threat of a nuclear weapon, which proves to be fruitless, and then a chase with Bob in this 5 mile an hour wooden airplane, I don't think anyone expects it to do anything. Like, it can't. There's no explosives on it.
Like, it's not. It's just gonna bounce off the building, right? Everyone but Bob knows that.
Yeah, it's a very. It makes for a very strange episode. And then and I think that really tops it off is Bob's comment as the episode ends.
How ironic! My crusade against television has come to an end so formulaic it could have spewed from the power book of the laziest Hollywood hack.
Everybody, I'm gonna haul ass to Lollapalooza.
Here we go again.
I like Marge's.
That's right, going to Lollapalooza.
I like Marge's. Like 1 second behind the rest of the family. Which that Abe quote is also referenced earlier in the episode where Bob is listening to television, the Vanessa Redgrave. Also, I believe, character in that television show that he can't sleep also says something similar. I don't know. It's clear the ending is very much like, yeah, we didn't know how to end it either. Like, we didn't know this is a strange episode. I don't know. Yeah,
it's like, how is it supposed to end? Like, it was good up until the point the bomb went off, and then you're just like,
well, okay? It's the beginning of Bob not being a threat anymore.
That's true. And Bob moving from like real serious, I'm going to kill you, to hey, it's time for wackiness.
Yeah, and they kept that up for a while and then tried to go back, and I don't know if it ever worked again. Like, I can't think of a Bob episode after this that I actually felt like that menace. Just, I never felt that menace ever again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a natural progression of, like, hey, he's done this for 5 times and has never succeeded, so it doesn't really matter, like, what we do with him, because he's obviously not a threat. But this is just, like, he's no longer, like, consistent as a character. He's just a crazy person. Like, he was is life so bad in the minimum? Has he gone that crazy by from television that he thinks that a small airplane is going to kill Krusty?
Yeah, I mean, the only one I can think of that would cause Sideshow Bob to is sort of a threat, I think, was a Treehouse of Horror where he kept killing Bart and reanimating him.
Yeah, which is, I mean, when you actually have him succeed, when you actually have him commit the crime, it makes him scary again.
Yeah, but again, I don't think that was a real...
No, that was a Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah.
We're getting him again in the Treehouse of Horror that is on the same night as this episode debuts.
Uh-oh.
Episode 600. I don't know. That again, that is how the episode ends. It's a solid, it's funny, but there's no, I mean, all the characters in this are there. I mean, there is no, they try and make us care, but I don't know. I never really felt there's no drama in this. It is all just zany, madcap, cartoony stuff.
Yes. Which you need every once in a while.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's just certainly not. It's a drastic change of pace from the other Bob episodes, which I'm guessing is what they're going for.
Yeah, they're like, we're tired of having this character. This character used to be great for it. It's like, I feel like every horror franchise kind of does that after a while. Because if you think of Bob as a maybe crime, maybe horror, whatever
thriller.
Character.
Thriller,
like,
yeah.
Thriller, yes. Like Friday the 13th or something like that, where after a couple, say, five times, people understand how the episode's going to end, and they're just like, let's take it in a different direction so we can still use it.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, I understand. I think that it is a wise choice to just head that off of the pass and just go their own way, because they've already done, like, hey, Bob's not good at this thing a couple times already. And they did milk it for all it's worth. I mean, all those Bob episodes are really good. I just wish they had done it in a little bit tighter fashion. This episode is weird, very weirdly paced. The act breaks are the one for the second and third act makes sense because you get that the scene with the bomb and stuff. But I don't know. It just felt like it took a while to get going, and it's funny. It's a funny episode.
It's a very funny episode. It probably does not have what we're going to call the perfect balance for a Simpsons episode.
No, it is a little... It is uneven, although still very funny. And
yeah.
The Colonel... The name Colonel Hap Hap a Blap is one of the best. I could... Every time I say that, I laugh. Every time. I've said it like 100 times in this episode already, and it makes me laugh every time. It's just a ridiculous name. Well, we will rank it at the end of the show. No submissions for my favorite episode. If you have a favorite episode, please send it in at simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com. And I will read it when we get to that episode. Next up, Matt, it is time for comments from the newsgroup.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the newsgroup is where I would comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons newsgroup and see what people are talking about. Still dead. Or disappeared, but I still have, we still do have the Simpsons Archive, which is a great resource. Reviews are incredibly mixed. Some people love it. Some people really don't like it.
See, I can understand some people not liking it, but really not liking it. It's like, come on, guys. Did you not laugh at all?
I don't know. There's people who just, I think that the people that were reviewing this show at the time were like you or me if we are watching a topical television show at the time now. And
yeah.
Obviously we look back, we are diehard Simpsons fans, like most of our listeners, and we've watched all these episodes a million times. And we think of it like, well, obviously if you're posting on a Simpsons news group in 1995, you're probably a similar person. But that's not necessarily true. It could just be, I mean, the people who are news groups probably were on lots of news groups and probably were watching lots of television. So they probably, this is just another one of their slates of shows they watched and talked about on their news group.
Probably.
That's my best guess. There is one interesting review I caught on there because it has a review from Harry McCracken, who at the time was the senior associate editor of PC World Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
who he really enjoyed it and really thought the PC World Magazine gag was hilarious.
Well, I would hope so.
He now currently is an editor for Fast Company.
Indeed. He's also on Twitch fairly often. So if you like Harry, feel free to tune in from time to time.
What's Twitch, Matt?
It's a This Week in Tech.
Ah!
Basically a technology roundtable.
There you go. But not much else on there. We can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
The listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite ending to an episode? It's a tough, tough question. Lots of good answers. I appreciate all your responses. Again, you guys do a terrific job. I wish I had time to read them all. First up from Mitch Doyle 13, Das Boos ending is perfect. Jamesy Jones as a narrator for a one-line gag, and the choice of Mo is just so crazy, it works. I like pulling Das Bus endings because it makes Matt crazy.
The dumbest ending ever.
It's
but
great.
Also really funny.
No, it's great. Ryan at EID9, the end of Bart Starr when Homer starts cutting the cast and crew and production team, including the shushy lady. Pops at Pele. Transformers 5 with the Inside Out song. Crazy, random, and scared the hell out of me as a kid. Pat at Patrick Evans 2. Homer, Marge, I'm confused. Is this a happy ending or a sad ending? Marge's reply, it's an ending. That's enough. All right, that's good. From John, to alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Can't forget that. Izzy, still have to go with my favorite episode, Bart's Comet. Whole town coming together for whatever will be, and the fact that Comet is disintegrated to nothing bigger than a chihuahua's head like Homer prophesized earlier is just fantastic. Tim, and that was the only folly Springfield ever embarked upon, except for the giant popsicle skyscraper and the 50-foot magnifying glass and the escalator to nowhere.
JD, why is anybody on this thing?
JD's answer, the debarded. A rat runs around and Ralph pops out from the trash can and says, the rat symbolizes obviousness. It is really good. Chris's answer, Bart's new friend. Homer describes how much he loved his boyhood friend without realizing that it was own son made me ball. Melanie, the ending of Lisa's first word, Homer putting Maggie to bed saying, the sooner kids talk, sooner they talk back. I hope you never say a word. We are left with Maggie saying daddy to her father right after he's left her. And memory serves me correctly, it's the only time we ever hear Maggie speak. Yep, that's 100% accurate. Never hear her speak again.
Aww.
Well, they should have left.
Canonically.
Yes, they should have left. And it is a beautiful moment of Homer making connection with his youngest child and Maggie making her own connection with her father, even though he has left the room. It's a beautiful, truly a beautiful father-daughter moment. Yeah. I really wish they could have just left well enough alone. And not I think the episode from 2 weeks ago had Maggie talk a lot and none of the family realized it, wasn't it? It was that episode, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That gag doesn't do anything for me anymore. Brian's answer, do it for her at the end, Maggie makes 3. I don't think any more could say about the brilliance of this ending, so I'll leave it at that. Amy's answer, the end of Lisa's rival, starting with Ralph skipping along, saying, I beat the smart kids. They invite him to play anagrams, explain what anagrams are, and he answers with, my cat's breast smells like cat food. Kills me every time. And finally, Holly's answer. I have to go. Season 23 is a totally fun thing that Bart will never do again because it moved me to tears in a profound way. In my late 20s, after working full-time for 6 to 7 years, life began to feel redundant and pointless. I had been on a cruise and was so happy during, but I had trouble enjoying the final couple of days because I was so bummed about returning to everyday drudgery. Shortly after the cruise, I saw this episode. It was like the writers knew me and knew what I needed to see, as the episode focuses on Bart experiencing the same feelings and tricking the cruise and remaining at sea, albeit not in luxury conditions. By the end of the episode, Bart has learned that life is about the memories you make with the people who are special to you. In the final seconds, we see an elderly Bart in a hospital bed with photos of he and his family, both the one we know and his son, seen in future set episodes, having fun and says, it's been a great ride. I bawled my eyes out and can truly thank The Simpsons for showing me something that I need to see clearly even at nearly 30 years of age. That is a very good ending. It's a very good latter-day Simpsons episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite ending, Matt?
Well, there are so many. It's really hard to pick. I have to say, there are a few that I really enjoy. Lemon of Troy came very close with the glass of turnip juice. Also, Lisa's wedding, when we come back to the present and Homer is like, well, I ate this and I ate this, and then I got a little dizzy. And then I wrote it again, and Lisa is super happy, and I just, that warms the cockles of my heart, even the subcockle area. But I'm actually going to go with King Size Homer at the end when Mr. Burns is like, I guarantee it. One. Ah, blast it, I'll just pay for the liposuction. That cracks me up every time.
I'm going to go with, I had to deliberate for a bit, but I'm going to just go with Bart's Comet. I can't.
Yeah.
It's a great ending, and it, I really like it because it mixes both the heartfelt and the ridiculous very well, because, you know, you get the whole town abandoning Flanders' shelter and singing. Then you also get the notion that Homer accurately predicted exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
Runner-up is Duffless, with Homer and Marge Aww. Riding away in the sunset to raindrops falling on my head and the bicycle. I really like that. Next week's question. What is your favorite Chief Wiggum moment?
Oh, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, think about that. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about it. Again, I will post this question on all of our social media places. Facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. Again, you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Like, follow, you know, that stuff. Good things. Social media words. Matt, it is time.
Time for what?
Time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season. Whoever loses has to eat 64 slices of American cheese, or at least try. I think I can do it if I had to.
Probably, but yeah.
I mean, think about I think of the size of the package of 64 slices of American cheese, you know, you see at the store. I think I could just eat that. I think we have to mandate that we'd eat it slice by slice. Homer does. Like, it's not fair. Like, I could get it over real quickly if I just took, like, but of course they're individually wrapped usually too. So you'd have to.
That's true. Unless you get the premium kind. Although I think it would be easier to eat the non-premium kind.
The premium kind tastes better.
Well, true, but they're also thicker. So,
That's, I think, I don't know. That's, it depends what, how you like your cheese too. I know some people who prefer the cheap cheese.
They're weird.
Cheap cheese product. Okay, Matt, I'll start us off. I got an easy question for you.
All right.
These are all from Homer Palooza.
Ooh.
You did a Homer Palooza theme for me like a month ago, but I've been thinking about Homer Palooza, so I went.
You've got some tougher questions.
We'll see. I don't know. I have no idea if you're going to get. I think you could or you couldn't. I still don't know how to gauge your knowledge.
I remember lots of random things.
What talent does Homer display in the freak show in Homer Palooza?
He is shot in the stomach with a cannonball.
That is correct.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, your easy question. Let me see. That was last week, so yeah, this is the correct one. All right. You had to make sure it's the right questions I'm asking. I don't want to ask questions I've already asked. What sports team's win causes Homer to get incredibly drunk in Wild Bart's Can't Be Broken?
The Isotopes?
You are correct, sir.
Good. That was good. No, I can't remember. I vaguely remember Wild Bart's Can't Be Broken.
Mm-hmm.
Your meme question. There are four bands/artists that guest star in Homer Palooza. Name all four.
Smashing Pumpkins, Cypress Hill, Peter Frampton, and Sonic Youth in his cooler. There we go.
You're correct.
Sorry, I'm like, Cypress Hill had the band, Bashing Pumpkins was obviously, Peter Frampton had the pig, and Sonic Youth was stealing from Peter Frampton's cooler. Mm-hmm. That's them.
Yeah.
Medium question's kind of easy.
Oh, if you say No, go ahead.
All right, what do the kids use to broadcast their pirate radio signal in Wild Bart's Can't Be Broken?
That's kind of easy.
Remember the episode at all.
I don't remember that episode. I don't remember Wild Bart's Can't Be Broken at all.
No.
I can guess though. Is that the one where they're hiding behind the billboard?
You're close.
That's what I thought. Is it? It's like a weather station or something. I don't remember.
Do you officially give up?
Weather station. They use an old weather station.
I'm sorry. You were close with the billboard. The point is they use Wiggum's coffee cup from the We're Always Watching You. And it's got like a mechanical coffee cup thing that goes up and down on the billboard. And they use the concavity of that oversized beverage conveyance.
Okay. I don't remember. your hard question. Homer visits a record store, one of Springfield's record stores, in Homerpalooza. What is both the old and new name for the record store?
The old name is Good Vibrations. The new name is... Oh, God. What is the new name? Oh, man. It's something depressing and nihilistic and... Oh, God, what is it? I have no idea. Nothing is coming to me.
The old name is Good Vibrations. The new name is Suicide Notes.
Oh, of course. Dang it. Oh, well.
All right, Matt, give me my hard question.
All right, your hard question is, in Wild Bars Can't Be Broken, who does the final curfew apply to?
The final curfew?
Mm-hmm. At the end of the episode, there is a final curfew. Who does it apply to? Because the whole point is, in the beginning of the episode, rowdy teens destroy it. So.
Yes, but it's Homer and the crew. Yeah, it's right. It's coming back to me. Adults.
You're going to have to be a little more specific than that.
Okay. People over 12. People over 12.
Is that your final answer?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I'm sorry. It is people under the age of 70 it applies to.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. Again.
Yeah.
I don't. You're
sorry, Robbie.
You're killing me. It is. You're okay. So final score for now, it's 32. Matt's winning by 4 points. I gotta dial it in. I just don't have. I don't have time to. I gotta.
Hey, you got me on the suicide notes.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. That's great. I can start eating the cabbage now, expand my stomach so I can fit all that cheese in there. if you guys have any questions or themes you'd like me to throw at Matt, please send them in. We'll use them if we can. Really appreciate anyone who does send them in. We can move on to our final segment. Again, we sent the Eggment. The segment we end every single episode with. It is time for best episode ever.
Best episode ever.
Best episode ever. Is the part of the show where Matt, I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever, and how good they are. Where is this one, Matt?
Could you hear my sighing, my brow?
Yeah. It's a little tricky.
It's tricky because, as we've said throughout this entire review, this is a really funny episode.
It is really funny.
It's constantly gaggish, and you've got Arlie Ermey and Kelsey Grammer, and it's really good, but that's really all it has to it. So I was looking through at the other Sideshow Bob episodes, and I'm looking at obviously not as good as Black Widower, at least in my opinion. I've got Sideshow Bob Roberts, which I think is better because it has more of a important feel. Bob feels somewhat threatening in that. And beyond that, it's quite a while until we get to another Sideshow Bob episode. No,
his first appearance, Krusty Gets Busted, is at 110.
Right.
Which, it's better than that. I'm not going to put it down in Krusty Gets Busted. I would put it, I don't know. It's pretty low, relatively low, I guess, for me.
Yeah, that's one thing is when I'm looking at them like, that's better.
It's going
pretty far down.
I would put it in the neighborhood of like A Star Is Burns, which is at 54 right now.
Okay, I was actually looking a little lower than that.
Okay,
but,
I don't know. Like, I'm not, again, super committed to, like, I don't know. Like, I keep looking on the list and going, probably would prefer that one. Like, there's Whacking Day, Bart Gets Famous, Marge and the Lamb. Is this better than Marge and the Lamb?
I really enjoy my Marge episodes because she gets so little exposure. But I think technically and in terms of jokes, this is a better episode. So it's kind of hard to weigh those things. What do you think?
I would say Marge and the Lamb is better.
I would think so.
Strictly, too, yeah. not necessarily. This is funnier than Marge and the Lamb, but this is more about. This is not necessarily all about how funny an episode is. I would put it. I think it is probably. I would put it right below Marge and the Lamb.
I can definitely see that.
I think
that puts it right above Brother from the Same Planet. I think this is better than Brother from the Same Planet, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Kelsey Grammer's voice acting, we really do appreciate it a lot. But I think it puts it just above Brother from the Same Planet. Although I might just if we had a system for it, I would tie them. But I don't want ties, so we could put it right above it.
Ties are for the indecisive.
We decided. Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming, number 67 on our list, right above Brother from the Same Planet, right below Marge and the Lamb. Still number one is Cape Fear. Last on our list is Homer's Odyssey, number 129. It's our next episode, Matt.
Next episode, let's check the Oracle of Wikipedia. I believe it is the... Oh, are we doing the 138th episode spectacular? Are we skipping that clip show?
We're going to do it.
Okay, I thought so, because it's like half clip show, never seen before.
It's a weird thing. It may be a little less formal than we normally have. I don't know. We're going to figure it out what we're going to do with that thing. Because I do think it should be, we should talk about it, because it's not a clip show. Like, it is a weird, strange thing that I have a lot of feelings about. I feel like a lot of people do. We should at least talk about it. It may be, I don't know. We'll figure it out. I don't know what we're going to do. We'll watch it and talk about it and do the things we do. You can find this list, Best Episode Ever list, on our website, simply thesimpsonsshow.com. Also, there are links to every single episode, downloadable and streaming, links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, and also link to our Patreon. If you think the show's worth a couple bucks, we really appreciate it if you threw it our way. See, before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my other podcasts, both Handsome Boys Comics Hour, which is about comic books, and The Serial Fanaticist, which is Fanatic IST, about everything. Matt does not participate in social media. You won't, unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true. However, I have decided to move in with the mole people. I'm actually an ambassador to them, just in case things in the next month or so go a little wonky. If you need to contact me, just drill a hole. Mostly they congregate in Denver, about 6 feet below. So just go to Denver, drill a 6-foot hole, drop a message down. I should be able to get it, or they should get it to me. I'm the ambassador there. So, you know, that's your way.
You're the ambassador of
the mole people. To the mole people.
To the mole people. Okay.
Indeed.
Is Mole Man the leader?
No, he is actually a spy. And no one has yet figured out that he is a real mole person. Oops. You'll need to wipe your memory with the the amnesia ray.
There's a lot of problems here. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the Simpsons.
Shh.